everyone. My name is Nicole, and you're listening to All Access Pass on CITR 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Vancouver on the unceded territory of the Hukaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Today's show is very special, and I think you definitely want to tune in because we will have a panel discussion on the topic terminology and language use when discussing disability and accessibility topics. In the room, I am joined by my fellow Accessibility Collective members, Sarah, Kevin, and Lydia, who will be asking questions to our three panelists. You will hear more on them very soon, but let's talk about the history on labels used when it comes to disability. To start things off, here are some obsolete classification terms for intellectual disability. These terms no longer have any legitimate medical meaning, but that's how they were used. This list comes from mentalhelp.net article titled History of Stigmatizing Names for Intellectual Disabilities. I issue right now a content warning of terms that may follow that may trigger negative reactions. Cretin is a very old term. It is thought to come from the French word meaning Christian. This term originally reflected the notion that people with intellectual disabilities, IDs for short, were still Christians, thus they should still be treated with kindness. Ironically, in today's language, this term has negative connotation. Its meaning is derogatory. Idiot is derived from the Greek language. It was used to classify people with severe intellectual disabilities. It referred to people who could not take care of themselves and required 24-hour care. The term gradually became mainstreamed. By the mid-1890s, its derogatory usage caused the medical community to discontinue its use. Mongolism, or mongoloid, was a medical term. It was used to identify someone with Down syndrome. For obvious reasons, the Mongolian People's Republic objected to this use. They requested that the medical community cease the use of this term, and their request was granted in the 1960s. The World Health Organization agreed that the term should no longer be used within the medical community. Moron was an invented word. A psychologist named Henri Godard developed the term. It was used to classify people with mild intellectual disabilities. Godard created the novel word by combining parts of words like sophomore and oxymoron. The term dementia is unique. Its meaning has not changed in the hundreds of years. The term first emerged during the 16th century. It was used in reference to people who lost mental functioning. In 1912, the term dement was used to classify people who lost their previous level of functioning. Today, the term dementia remains a similar meaning. However, in 2013, dementia was relabeled as a neurocognitive disorder. Until recently, the prevalent model of disability has been the medical model, in which the disabled person is seen as the problem. Usually, the focus is on the impairment rather than on the needs of an individual. Now for a bit more on the word retarded, as that word has been mentioned a few times already in meetings with the Accessibility Collective. In 2010, United States Congress passed a law forcing federal agencies to scour their literature and rules and scrub the term retarded. The American Psychiatric Association held on until 2013, when it finally dropped the term mentally retarded from the fifth revision of its Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, the DSM-5. A report prepared under contract to the Corrective Services of Canada in March 1991 states the following, quote, "The term mental retardation is very widely used in the literature reviewed in this paper. When it came into the general use roughly midway through the present century, it was probably thought to be less stigmatizing than the terms it replaced. Particularly in Canada, however, there has been a movement away from labeling people mentally retarded. It is a term which has popularly been used as a term of derision. The national organization formed during the 1950s to further the interests of Canadian citizens with intellectual disability changed its name in 1985 from Canadian Association for the Mentally Retarded to Canadian Association for Community Living, primarily at the insistence of persons who knew from personal experience that being called retarded was damaging to them. It creates expectations of inferiority and inadequacy from which flow all manner of adverse responses to that individual. End quote. The term low functioning is very widely used as a mask for mental retardation. The Criminal Code of Canada now uses the terms, quote, suffering from mental disorder, end quote. That's from Section 16, where mental disorder is defined as a disease of the mind. And, quote, a person with a mental or physical disability, end quote. That's from Section 153.1. According to one of my friends who is a high school teacher, very recently, though I cannot quite pinpoint exactly when, the province of BC replaced the word handicapped with the phrase special needs. That is where things are heading in BC right now. To close this segment, I want to comment on an article that Accessibility Collective Coordinator DP listed as a good article when preparing questions for the panel members. That article is from AUCD.org. It's titled Respectful Disability Language, : Here's What's Up. My biggest problem with this article is it does not include autism under the list or chart of disabilities when promoting respectful language. Autism does not seem to be included in many other documents that promote respectful language for disabilities. What can be a positive thing to take, though, from this article from AUCD.org is what respectful language does look like when people are consulted from those various disability groups. That is one thing they got correct, and all organizations should follow that. Now, it's time for the panel. I'll pass it on to Lydia.
Hi, guys. Thanks for that, Nicole. That was great. So just to start us off, starting with Mark, if you guys could speak a little bit about yourselves and how you ended up in this room.
Hi, my name is Mark, and I'm a 58-year-old Vancouverite. I have a very diverse background. I come from a home that was broken by my father's suicide when I was 11. I was taken to a psychiatrist for evaluation due to unusual behavior when I was 10. But at that time, they were not diagnosing ADD. That occurred much later when I was 39. I was subjected to alcohol and drugs as early as 8 years old. I experienced emotional, mental, and physical abuse by my mother and older brother, resulting in my leaving home for government care at age 16. At 18, I started living on the streets, homeless, as a criminal, and was in and out of prison until I was 36. As well as my mental disability, I have medical disabilities that include a back injury, type 2 diabetes, and a history of liver disease. I have been in and out of recovery since 96, and I am 6 years clean now. I am designated as a person with disabilities and live with my wife in BC Housing. And it was my wife that encouraged me to participate in this panel today.
I'm Nicole. Thank you, Mark, for your introduction and congratulations on your 6 year going strong. Again, I'm Nicole, and I'm the other Nicole. I'm a panelist. I am a nurse as well. I am also hard of hearing. A bit about myself. I grew up hard of hearing since I was 1 year old. I've attended public schools with not a lot of hard of hearing peers. and probably just about 6 years ago, joined the Hard of Hearing community and just kind of opened up my world. And that's how I learned about this accessibility program and met one of the interviewers, Kevin, here, and I'm happy to talk about the terminology.
Thank you, Nicole, and congrats, Mark. I'm Allison. I'm a master's student at Athabasca. I was diagnosed with some form of learning disability when I was 6 months old, and I found out at 19 through self-identification and diagnoses at 19 with developmental dyspraxia, which is a cousin to autism. So that is kind of why I struggled so much when I was little. But now I'm in my master's. I'm a Vancouverite. I first went to private schools, jumped around private schools because not a lot of teachers understood who I was. And then eventually ended up in homeschooling, which I flourished in. And I now am in my master's, which is awesome.
Hi, Kevin here. Thank you guys all for those great introductions. It's great to meet all of you. So the second question we have is pretty open-ended. It's a two-part question. The first part asks, what adjectives did you describe yourselves with when you were a child versus how you describe yourself now? Has anything changed there? Has it remained the same? The second part of the question is, would you use the medical term to describe what your disability was, or simply use phrases like, I have a disability, and leave it at just that?
Mark here. As I stated in my introduction, I wasn't diagnosed until I was 39. And as a result, there wasn't any call for use of terms. I do often refer to my disability as ADD. Sometimes I will use ADHD because that's what's in the diagnostic manual now. So just to be using the correct language, I'll use that. But I do identify as having adult attention deficit disorder.
This is Nicole, panelist Nicole here. Growing up, again, I would have to remind that I grew up, you know, in the average hearing world where I wasn't really mingling with other hard of hearing individuals. So when I introduced myself, I've always just, you know, acted like I really didn't have a disability. So really, I kind of just said, like, my name is Nicole, and that's just who I was. And so when I started kind of, you know, meeting new people, which is post-secondary school, going to work and so forth, also, you know, introducing myself didn't really change too much. Perhaps when it came to actually going into a career and realizing, you know, this is something serious and you're needing to communicate a lot, and hearing is two-way communication thing. So I did at some point have to start disclosing. And I also didn't really identify as a person with disability until I actually started doing my taxes and didn't realize that I had a disability tax credit, which means I identified as a person with a permanent disability, and that was a new identity for me, which is so interesting. I've always been hard of hearing since I was one, but never really introduced myself as a person with disability. So I guess as a child versus now, I used to think of myself as just a nice kid who was shy, for sure. I am still a little bit shy. But now I'll say I'm Nicole, and if it comes up in a conversation that we can't hear each other very well, or the conversation is just too much of like, what did you say? I'll say, yeah, sorry, I have hearing aid, or I'm hard of hearing. That's what I leave it as.
So, Nicole, just to clarify, you'll mm-hmm. only bring it up when there's a reason to. You don't bring it up right away.
Yeah, okay. Correct.
I'm kind of like Nicole as well, Allison. When I was a kid, I think because I was so different from the other kids, I didn't look different, but I needed extra support. I would always say, I'm slow. Or I'm lazy, which isn't true. Yes, I need extra support, but I'm not slow. I'm not lazy. Or for a time period, I went through selective mutism, which can be kind of scary for everybody else around. But for me, it's like I don't even want to talk to people. It was really tough. Now, if I'm comfortable, I'll say, oh, yeah, this is what I have. But please get to know me first before saying anything, before I tell anybody.
So did you feel like slow and lazy had negative connotations when you were younger?
Oh, yes. Because I couldn't keep up with the other children. And I also needed a computer. I was one of the first kids in the public schools or any school system within BC to get a computer in class. All of the other kids had to write by hand. And because I had the computer, other kids would say, that's not fair. Why can't we get the computer? And I said, and I wouldn't respond, but now thinking about it, if I were to stand up, I would be like, that's not fair that you're normal, right?
Well, thanks for sharing that. So I'm just wondering from you guys, like, what are some words that you think you wouldn't want someone to use? And if someone said handicap, how do you feel about the word handicap?
So there aren't a lot of words that get to me, but because of my background, the word goof, or with a superlative that starts with the letter F before that, can get to me and I'll respond. Words that I don't use are cripple, retard, freak, loser, whack job, or mental case. What's interesting, though, is that I still see these words being used in a lot of stuff that comes out of Hollywood. In our mainstream movies, I think of The Sopranos in particular, with that use of the word whack job, referring to anybody that had mental illness. And I think that that's where the battle is against language, is when people are still being introduced to it and it's still being presented in a way that's acceptable. The word handicapped, I don't feel like that word ever applied to me. My best friend growing up had muscular dystrophy, and when I was in grade six, a group of boys, or grade three, a group of other boys from the school came to me and said that my friend was a gimp, and that anyone that hung out with a gimp was a gimp as well too. And I thought to myself at that young age, if that is the way that you are, that you're going to ostracize somebody because they walk with a gait and cannot participate in physical education, then you're not the kind of friends I would want to have. And at that point, I made a decision to be loyal to my friend, because I had it a lot better at his place with his family and the supports he was receiving than I did at home. And, they invited us to play with them one day, and I thought they were going to hurt my friend, and I was watching very carefully for his safety and not my own. And the trap had been set for me, and they had hit a skipping rope, and as I ran by, they pulled it up and tripped me and smashed my teeth out. But I'll take that. If I could go back and do it again, I would make the same choice, even though that happened to me. The word handicap has been used for a long time. I think we still call it a handicap pass, and we still call it handicap parking. So I just see it as being regularly used. If someone used it on me in that context, it wouldn't offend me. I wouldn't take exception to it. I imagine that there are better words, but I don't know that special needs. I mean, special has its own connotation. So I guess one of those terms that I don't like is short bus special. So I'll leave it at that.
Very interesting points. I completely agree, and I didn't... Oh, this is Nicole here. Nicole, the panelist. Same thing with the handicap parking spots. I didn't know what term we were actually going to start using. But also wasn't totally 100% comfortable with all the other terms that were sort of out there. Anyways, terms that I don't like people using, I'm a little bit the same. I'm not too hung up on every, you know, politically correct term all the time, but there are some words that are a little bit cringy, and I've gotten over them by now, but in the past, I think the biggest one was deaf. I think it's just because deaf isn't accurate of my level of hearing. Deaf in the medical world means that you are completely non-hearing. And it used to make me cringe when people use another identification, which is you can be hard of hearing, you can be hearing impaired, hearing loss, or deaf, or and it's just one of the terms that someone else would put on me, and I didn't identify as with one of those words. I used to grow up saying hearing impaired. That's just how I was raised, and now I actually steer away from it because impaired has that connotation of drunkenness, intoxication, and you know, mm-hmm. something less of and not perfect. And yeah. So steered away from hearing impaired, although the people who I've known for the first, you know, 20 or so of my life, I'm sorry, I'm not hearing impaired anymore. Don't like special needs, and I don't like needs, don't like accommodations. That is also still technically used, I think, when a person with a disability or adverse ability, what have you, would say, I have a device that I need to use when I come to a conference. It's like, it would be a form that says special needs or like accommodations, that kind of thing. Don't love it, but that's what I have to kind of deal with in terms of labeling what it is. And what else can I say? I used to also steer away from the term hearing loss. Like, it's not just a loss. It's not something that I'm mourning over exactly. That's my answer for that question. Allison, I'll let you take over.
Hi. I like the term neurodiverse because I am a diverse human being. I also like to say learning issues, not learning disabled, because I can still learn. And it just, you know, I just need a little bit of steering to the right to learn. Accommodations, I don't mind because, like, I need to be accommodated. But... So that's fine. Neurodiverse and learning issues are my two big ones. I also don't like special needs because even though I am the twinkle of my daddy's eye, I am not that special. I am not that type of special person that needs that label. So.
Yes, thank you for that. Now, I'd like to touch upon sort of broader media forms. Mark, you talked about The Sopranos, and I'm wondering if any of you have encountered news articles or Hollywood-produced media recently that portrayed sort of language around disability in a way that was particularly noticeable to you, good or bad?
Before I answer that, would it be okay if I answered question four?
Yes, of course.
Terminologies you don't mind using would be other abled, only for the fact that it's something, anything to replace disabled. And I want to make something else clear, too. From my introduction, I said that Nicole was my wife that brought me here. I want to make it clear that it's Nicole the host, not Nicole the panelist, just so there's no confusion about who's who. I do use the term autistic or Audi or even Aspie, which is like an abbreviation for Asperger's, and the term neurodiverse. And all of these I use with permission. I would never assume to use any of those terms without asking the person directly. And I believe that this is the crux of the problem with terminology, is that it is an individual preference, yet media and government and lawmakers have to come up with terms that are positive to accompany everyone's preferences. I have to confess, I really enjoyed the articles that we were presented with, and it showed an area that I was lacking in not going online and looking up this sort of stuff. And so I do have to answer saying that prior to preparing for this panel today, I had not seen any stories in the media or anything about language. I only know from personal experience at attending different type of workshops and activities with my wife, Nicole, that I've started adopting and learning about the language. Nicole?
Panel Nicole here. I didn't know I would be married to someone. Just kidding. I'm not married to Mark. I'm panelist Mark. I will touch on the same topic that question four, what we're talking about, is terminology that I don't mind using before we go into the article one. I typically use, I'm in between two. I sometimes say that I'm hard of hearing and that I have hearing aids. A new one, just because I just recently joined the hard of hearing community, that I kind of really like now is hearing level. Just kind of saying, like, you don't have a hearing loss, you're not hearing impaired, I'm not hard of hearing. I like that term now, level of hearing. I do agree with Mark about permission, words that people with a certain condition will use. Permitted identities, and yes, I agree the government is going to have difficulty with that. But very, recently this week, the Bill C-81, the one about accessibility for those with adverse abilities, and I'm going to say adverse abilities because I feel more comfortable saying something not related to disabilities as well. I won't get too politically correct about looking into exact terms. So I'm looking forward to what the government will use in terms of, like, friendly language as well, but excited for that. The abbreviation for hard of hearing is H-O-H, and when you pronounce it, it's ho. And as an inside community joke, it's, like, kind of fun to just, be a little bit proud of, like, what you identify within your community. And sometimes I like to say within my group of friends that these are my whole friends, and just to kind of give a little bit of humor to it. It's not all like that sad to have XYZ. And then can I go into your next question? Sorry that we kind of just skipped over about things in the media. There wasn't anything that popped out to me right away, but I guess initially there was a very short clip released by City TV or CTV news channel, and it was they wanted to highlight the charity acts that Variety Club gave. And one of them was a child in, I think he was in elementary school, and he had funding for an assistive device to help him hear in social situations, hearing a teacher for lecture situations, family gatherings. And he talked about how it was super helpful for him to have, because this device, I think, is like at least a couple $1,000. And the way the reporter, presented it was, he said it was a very life-changing device, and it is super helpful, but I think it didn't really accurately portray that devices are not going to save someone with a sensory deficit or a sensory... to say that a Roger Penn, which is what they were talking about, wasn't going to miraculously change their life and fill every hole in their life. Communication is two-way. So you can't just have a set of hearing aids or a listening device that will miraculously, like, fill in all the average person's misgivings. That's what I wanted to add.
Yes, and just to add in there, that's a good example of the ways in which discourse and media will perpetuate this idea that people need saving from their diverse abilities or from not being neurotypical. All right.
Oh, yeah. I see that as well. And I know with there's nothing in the media about my learning issue. I look up learning issues just as a broad term. like on BuzzFeed, and I get Special Olympics. And I'm like, yeah, no, that's not my IQ. That's not even close to what I'm trying to look for. Or I get autism, or I get something that is a lot more well-known, or other medias that, like, media, would be those shows that have a deaf person or a person who have different hearing levels or a person who has autism, and they're played by either people who have those conditions or they're played by able-bodied, but there's no one that I know that have the exact same thing as me, which is kind of difficult.
Thank you for those answers. The next question naturally complements the previous question you were answering about news stories and articles or any sort of media coverage on disability. When it comes to disability and accessibility topics, do any of you think it's important for news reporters or writers to understand about disability and accessibility topics? Or is it best to have a person with the disability themselves, if it's possible, do the writing and talking, or both?
Yes, especially because many of us other able share the motto, nothing about us without us. And so just like it's been referenced earlier about the preference in language, it's very individualized. And so I don't pretend to be able to speak for my wife, Nicole, in regards to the challenges facing autistics in this regard. But I can say that they are often left out of the conversation. If people understand about autism, they would understand about the associated low self-esteem. And to be left out of conversations, it only exemplifies that loss of self-esteem because they feel that they're not worthy to be included in the conversation. Yet the decisions that are made regarding them affect them so adversely, I'll go so far as to say, because they're left out, and the decisions that are made often favor what the parents want in regards to stabilizing or programming the behavior of their children, and almost as to remove their autism as though it's some type of tragedy or burden. Nothing about us without us. And that should almost be passed into legislation. I don't think that I feel very strongly that any legislation that has any effect on any individual or community that identifies as providing services to people with that are other abled, that they should have to consult and include the results of that consultation into the programs and services that they develop. And I think this starts with the lawmakers. That's all I got to say about that.
I love that quote, nothing without us. Oh, did I mess it up?
Nothing about us.
Without us. There you go. Yeah, I love that. I think the bill, C81, is basing some of their legislation off of that.
Wait, I loved it as soon as I heard about it. Can you tell us a little bit about that bill?
Can I tell you a little bit about it? I think Mark knows a little bit more about it, but no? Nope.
Go ahead. Just a brief summary.
Just briefly, it's the Accessibility Act. They're just trying to change a lot of accessibility for people with all walks of adverse abilities. And basically, they spent like huge amounts of like months and money and meetings all across Canada to talk about like what are your barriers, what do you need, what are your ideas. And they brought this in the end brought together a bill, C-81, called the Legislation Act, and it was to help people get accessibility, and that was from start to end in terms of your application to the government. When you say, when I mentioned earlier that I'm a person with a permanent disability, and through my taxes, I have a tax credit, that application is sometimes difficult for people to get approved for, and they want, that's one of the things that they want to change, making it so that you don't have to be a oh my God, I'm losing the word.
Well, I mean, that's kind of ironic that it would be difficult to get accessibility help when you have accessibility issues.
Yeah, or that you have to reapply for an accommodation when you are deaf. For example, my friend in Montreal had to reapply for that status, and it's not like it's going to change for her. So it's kind of ironic. Yeah, you're right. If you want to fill in about the bill, you can if you like.
I don't know anything about this bill, so you've been very informative. Thank you.
The person who is helping to put this bill forward is also blind, so she also has a person with an adverse ability, and quite intelligent. I guess we'll hear more about it in the news. I guess going back to writers, reporters, and understanding disability, accessibility topics, our reporters in the media, they inform everything that's going on in our world, and I'm not going to ostracize them for like trying to at least talk about a topic. I think they're needed in our world, like especially in today's so-called fake news and all this crazy. We owe our information to them, and I think there just needs to be a little bit of sensitivity training, maybe, if we're offended by a couple of terms, but. You know, we can't just have one-sided reporters here, people with only disabilities talking about just disability, because you need to hear the other side. I mean, the same thing goes with closed captioning, for instance. A lot of deaf and hard of hearing people love closed captioning. And if you're only going to hear it from the deaf and hard of hearing people talking about how great it is, what person who's average hearing would be like, yeah, I agree, you're 100% right, blah, blah, blah. The probability of that happening isn't going to be very likely. But if someone who was average hearing and was saying in the media, as a reporter or a blog person, was saying, it's great, look at the closed captioning benefits, and using these languages, you know, it's beneficial to the community, is a plus for both worlds. So I have no problem with it. I think sensitivity training would be super helpful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think sensitivity training is super helpful. But also, just as a like blind courtesy, if you're going to report on something, at least know a little bit about it. Do a little bit more research on this. Because I know a lot of people don't know like what dyspraxia is. They've never met a person with dyspraxia. I'm usually the first one. I'm usually the only one they will ever meet. So that's tough. So just a little bit of that goes a long way. I've had some bad experience about sensitivity training, and it was really dependent on the person. It was because I was at a job and the person didn't want... it was my manager who didn't want to do the sensitivity training and complained adversely, saying it took up too much of her time. And this was at the federal government level. So it was... But just a little bit of like, oh, what is dyspraxia? What is autism? What is... hearing levels, right? Like, so that they get to know, and then they can come more informed and understand that person.
Great, thank you. And that highlights one of the ways in which sort of even within the realm of people with diverse needs, there are standards of normativity and sort of things that are considered normal. I'd like to turn our attention to functioning labels. And how people are termed low-functioning or high-functioning. often by medical practitioners. I'd like to know what your feelings are and thoughts are about these terms and if you find them helpful or detrimental.
I think they can be both helpful and detrimental.
Wow,
mm-hmm. Yeah. I think they're helpful in that it can show others who don't know me, can help me and figure out ways to help me better. Yeah. I think it's detrimental, though. It's like a double-edged sword, mm-hmm. right? They're going to label me and put stereotypes on me, which that's the detrimental part. And if they have never grown up with seeing a person with any type of disability or different abilities in their lives, they can be quite harsh, and they could do a lot more harm than good.
I just wanted to comment on that. It seems like overall what you guys are feel like you're quite empathetic towards people not understanding. Nice. It seems like you're quite empathetic overall towards people not understanding where you're at. And, like, it's just interesting to see, like, it's just a little bit interesting to see that based on how much you feel like they understand, you'll be, like, kinder or, like, more welcoming. Like, it seems like for the hard of hearing, maybe you feel like people understand a little bit better, but you don't understand your dyspraxia, so you get more frustrated with people not understanding.
I think people don't understand because it's so rare. And that I've had comments, oh, did you eat something wrong? You don't look disabled. It's kind of more of a hidden thing.
What do you think, Nicole?
That's a good observation you made. I'll just briefly say that, you know, I think for all of us or anybody who's been sort of judged over whether it be some kind of ability or, you know, it could be like ethnic backgrounds or anything. But when someone uses a certain language or a label, it kind of just kind of puts them on a hierarchy of like what their understanding is. And I think when you're talking about change, like what we're talking about right now, is you have to understand where people come from. And you have to understand that if you want change, you need to open that up to discussion in terms of, like, starting to get ideas rolling and understand one each other. Like, this is the same thing with, like, white people discrimination and the KKK. Mm-hmm. Like, you didn't have that discussion unless you talked about it. Like, you need to open it up and you need to understand where they came from. So, I mean, I'm not going to be offended unless they're, like, totally, totally disrespectful. You have to try it again, another, or someone else will have to. But I'm going to use that as an opportunity to teach. Talk if it's rare or if it's not correctly used, I'm going to use it an opportunity to be like, hey, not a big deal, but like, you know, I'm not deaf, just so you know what deaf means. So that's where I'm going to briefly talk on that. Can I pass it on to you, Mike?
Cool. Labels, low functioning or high functioning. These labels are offensive and stigmatizing to those they are labeling. It is indicative of our society's performance-based brainwashing, starting with praise from your parents if you did your chores or behaved, or were punished if you dropped something by accident and broke it, or getting a good grade on a test or for a course, or a raise or promotion at work, or the blue ribbon for first on sports day. We are either scholastic brainiacs and hero jocks, or we are made to feel inferior or quote-unquote less than. High functioning means I have a higher IQ than someone else with a similar disability, so does that make me better than them? No, but there's the possibility of that perception. Are those terms respectful or accurate in your opinion? Egregious.
Thanks, Mark. The next question is pretty long, so bear with me here. I was reading a publication recently, and I just wanted to pull out a few quotes from it. One, it's not really a question that I'm going to ask you guys to talk about. It just sort of reflects the position that I think all three of you have, which is sensitivity, but also understanding that being too hardline, politically correct can stop you from living your life amongst people who, you know, with varying levels of understanding. And so this publication on inclusive communications actually said the following. Sorry. Don't be too precious or too politically correct. Being super sensitive to the right and wrong language and depictions will stop you doing anything. That's not really the question. It, as I said before, it reflects what we're discussing. The publication, interestingly, also advises everyone when, you know, talking about differently able people or talking to them to use a normal tone of voice, to not patronize or talk down, and to address disabled people in the same way as you talk to everyone else. So what does a normal tone of voice mean to you? Any one of you can start. Mark, why don't you start us off?
Okay, so I have an answer for this. I just have to find out which question he was reading from because I'm still wondering where question seven was.
Question nine, I believe.
Thank you. Okay, so my answer, normal. Defined, okay, so what does a normal tone of voice mean to me? Define, quote, unquote, normal.
Exactly.
I would just say not any differently, especially not that condescending gaga voice used on very small children, nor any degree. So no change in language. Now, with I'll make an exception of this, but it's based on cultural, not other abled. And that is that I say I speak really good English second language or second language English. And what I mean by that is that I'm able to use very simple English terms, kind of like the basic Bible in English type of version where they do the entire book in using 800 words. So that is one thing that I do because we live in such a multicultural city and we have so many people here that are newly immigrated or English is their second language. And so I find that I am able to adjust my language for them. But that's the only time I adjust it. I will tell anybody in whatever tone I feel is correct, with whatever language I feel is appropriate, how I'm feeling or what I think about something. So, yeah, thanks for allowing me to share that.
I would agree not to change your tone of voice. I was going to say, like, talk to me or talk to someone else the way you would want to be spoken to. And that comes down to respect. I guess for, you know, condescending language, for someone who's hard of hearing, and even though they might use the same language, it's that tone, it's like what you mentioned, like, can you hear me? And like that, like, it's so, I know, it's so cringy and it's derogatory and, you know, just
so,
kind of like looking down on you.
Can you hear me?
Like, and they would say it was really, I know, and really long spaces and you're just like, you know. I think that's what you have to add to that.
I think the same thing, but I take it in a kind of a different approach. Get to know me first. Get me comfortable. And then find out what I have. And then you'll see that you're not going to talk to me any different than before you didn't know what I had. So that, like, just normal. Just like any other human. I know I also coach the Special Olympics. And with the athletes that I coach, I talk to them like any other human being, just out of respect. If they can't hear me or if they didn't understand what I said, I'll just go a little bit slower, say it again, and don't make a big huff or make them feel any less because they didn't understand what I said the first time.
Okay, team, I have to look up the question that I wasn't paying attention to.
So, someone help me out. So, we're going to come in here, and we're going to run an audio clip for you guys shortly. Yes, it's going to be great once it happens. It has so much content. It is so wonderful. I, for one, love hearing audio clips. They are great. This one is called Person First Language, and I would like you guys to listen to it and just tell us about what stands out to you in it.
What is Person First Language? Person First Language puts the person ahead of any disability identifier, meaning a person who has autism or a person with an intellectual disability. Why is this important? A person with a disability is a person first. People with disabilities do not want to be seen first and foremost by their disability. It devalues their inherent uniqueness and personhood. Additionally, a person who uses an assistive device is not bound by it. A person who uses a wheelchair, for example, is much freer to move around this world because of their chair. This stems from the social model of disability. A person is disabled by lack of access to their community and environment, not their impairment. Another common model is the medical model, which typically sees the person from a diagnostic point of view. Another common model is the charity model. This posits interventions or policies are done in the best interests of the person with a disability without including them or their experiences in the decision-making process.
We're just going to take a little break, and we'll be right back with the panel discussion on CITR 101.9 FM.